This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. We've got to talk some NBA basketball tonight. The Utah Jazz make their return here to KOAL. They'll take on the Los Angeles Clippers. A potential closeout game for the Jazz, looking to advance past the first round for the first time in quite some time. And joining us right now to talk a bit about that and some of the other storylines working its way around the NBA, we have James Holis. He's from bballbreakdown.com, and he's definitely an excellent basketball mind that we enjoy getting on the show. James, it's great to get you back on today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. I'm getting down to my defensive stance. I got my hands out wide. I'm like a Utah Jazz fundamental basketball player. I'm ready to roll.
They have played fundamentally sound basketball, to say the least, in this particular series. But, James, I really view tonight as a must-win for the Jazz. I mean, my logic in Game 7 is typically I like to favor the team that has the best player on the court. I still believe that CP3 is the best player in this series. Am I wrong for saying this is a must-win for the Jazz tonight?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say yes and no, because you would think so. Last home game, if it goes 7, Clippers go back home, all this, this. I just think the Clippers are in a different space. I think that we've seen, without Blake Griffin, if it's Chris Paul's not saving them, they don't have a lot of other help. I think Utah's just too deep. They're just too their attack's too varied. I think Gordon Hayward is too good. So I think, you want to slam the door now while you can at home, but I don't think from what we've seen with the Clippers, and this is not an attack on them, but their resolve has been tested, and they've come up wanting several times in the past. So I think that, I can't say it's a must-win for the Jazz.
The Jazz are favored by 5.5 points tonight, and this may be a little bit premature, but if, in fact, the Jazz do knock out L.A. tonight, is this it for this Clipper? I don't want to say regime. Is it the end for this Clipper core? Is it the end for Doc Rivers? Is it the end for Blake Griffin? Is it the end for this particular unit? Because I think the window was closed on this team. I thought the window had closed on this team 2 years ago. They get knocked out in the first round after having home court advantage and losing twice on their home floor. Some serious changes need to be made in L.A., right?
I mean, I want to say that, and I was all in on this same line of thinking back in February. But the more I listen to some Jazz bloggers and Jazz fans, it's like, what's the alternative? You blow it up, and then what do you do? Are you going to try to scrape along for a few years like Philly and hope you hit big in the draft? What are you really going to do? What's the point of blowing it up? I was reading today, Kevin Arnovitz had a really good piece, and he said that, I think only them and the Spurs have won 50 games in the last 6 years. Those only two teams have done that. They're a high-quality team, and sometimes we want teams just to be, a championship or bust, but in reality, you can't be that. I mean, they're playing in the age of Golden State. What would be the end game of blowing it up? So, I mean, I'm with you. I don't know. I'm with a lot of people who kind of feel they've been disappointing, I guess. They always feel like they leave something on the table. But taking everything off the table and throwing the table away doesn't seem like the right answer either. So,
no, that's a fair take. I think the problem that I see in L.A. right now is you have three All-Stars on this team. And when you have three All-Stars, you should get out of the first round.
I definitely understand that. And that's, I mean, my take on them is, it's a case of 1 + 1 + 1 equaling less than 3 somehow. And I think they're showing you that unless you have a guy like a supernatural athlete like Russell Westbrook or a supernatural shooter like Steph Curry and to a lesser degree Dame in Portland, I'm not sure if Chris Paul is that guy who can be your best player, with his physical kind of limitations. And because, I mean, as good as he is, if he gets 28 and 13, you're thinking that's an awesome night for him. Sometimes you need 45 from your best player. You need 50 from your best player. And he just can't really do that. I do think Blake or Chris Paul might have to go. Because I think, again, we have a kind of a dichotomy of styles there where those two, they're almost built traditionally. And in a modern NBA, that team just really can't flourish the way they are, the way they're built. So, it's funny how they've won so many games and they've been an upper echelon Western team for like 6 years now. We see them as a disappointment.
Yeah, they've disappointed, to say the least. As far as the Jazz go, how important is it? I don't think Gordon Hayward goes anywhere. I think the success that the Jazz have had in the postseason, I think that bodes well for Gordon Hayward. I don't see him leaving. I know there's been talk that potentially Boston could be interested in Gordon Hayward. How important is a first-round victory for the Jazz in terms of keeping the likes of Hayward and maybe even a George Hill around for another season, which is something that I know a lot of people here in the state of Utah have been talking about over the last couple of weeks?
I think from a fan outside looking in, it's really easy just to make a simplistic statement like, you know, you're not saying this, but I can see somebody saying, if they don't win this first round series, Gordon Hayward's gone because blah, blah, blah. But they've been building this Jazz team for years now, slow and steady. Every year they've been showing improvement. And win or lose, I don't think they're going to lose the series, but win or lose, I think you have to be really, pretty sure Gordon Hayward sees what he's built and what he's been part of and realizes it's only getting better. You know, Rudy Gobert is so young. They still have a lot of young pieces. Rodney Hill is getting better. So I think no matter what, I don't think he's going anywhere. But you're right. Winning this series would really go a big way when they enter free agency this year and they sit down in front of him and say, look what we're doing, look what we can do. So it would make it definitely make a difference, but I don't think it's the difference maker.
I agree with you. I don't think he's going anywhere, and I thought that going into the postseason. There's too many pieces right now in Utah that makes it a really viable situation for somebody like Gordon Hayward, and you know he's going to get paid. He is going to get the max contract here in Utah, which is something that nobody else can offer him. So, I mean, obviously, I think it's a great landing spot for Gordon Hayward. Our guest right now is James Holas of bballbreakdown.com. James, let's move on and talk about some other potential player movement. The Indiana Pacers, their season is done. Earlier today, we find out that Larry Bird will be stepping down as Pacers president. He will remain on as a consultant. You and I both know what that means to be a consultant. Larry Bird is basically done in Indiana, and I can't help but think the reason why Larry Bird is done in Indiana is because this is a franchise that is probably going to be sold here in the next 2 to 3 years. The most valuable asset on this team is Paul George, and he makes them a little bit more lucrative for someone shopping to buy a franchise. Larry Bird and Paul George, in my mind, it's a relationship that needs to come to an end, but if you're going to sell this franchise, guess what? You need somebody like Paul George.
I agree 100% with you. Miles Turner is going to be really, really good, maybe even great. But like you said, for a potential team buying this team, it's a lot easier, a lot better to sell them saying, hey, we have this franchise-level wing and Miles Turner versus we have Miles Turner and I don't know, Rodney Stuckey. I think Stuckey's gone now. But so, yes, I remember Larry Bird making the statement a couple summers ago, even last summer, where he was saying Paul George is going to play power forward. And somebody mentioned that Paul George didn't seem too keen on the idea, and his answer was, he doesn't make decisions around here. Well, Larry Bird, you're right and wrong. At the time, he made the decisions, but a star player is always going to be more valuable than an executive, especially in a case like this. He's legitimately a top 10, 15 type player, and he's in his prime. You don't try to shoehorn him into a position he doesn't want to do. They try to kind of rebuild on the fly while still holding on to the traditional sense. I think they probably need a new voice in Indiana. Larry did what he could, and he had some good run, but keeping Paul George happy has to be a priority.
That's what this is based around, right? Keeping Paul George happy. I mean, I can't see any other logical explanation outside of the fact that there have been some moves here recently in Indiana that I don't particularly care for. I didn't like the idea of getting rid of Frank Vogel. I know a lot of people will always go back and they look at the fact that this team traded Kawhi Leonard for George Hill, but look, as bad as that trade looks on paper, George Hill is very productive in the state of Utah. So, there have been some moves here as of late, the last 5 or 6 years, that I haven't necessarily agreed with from the Indiana front office to begin with.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, man. People talk about the Kawhi deal, but no one, even Pop said he had no idea Kawhi would be as good as he is. So you give them a mulligan on that one. George Hill was excellent, but then you move George Hill for Jeff Teague, who's not really that great a fit, I think, with Paul George. Then, you get Thad Young is a great player. I don't know if he's the right player for this team. The Lance Stephenson handling, how you lost him, and then now you get him back a couple years later. I don't know if I wouldn't say Bird is a bad executive at all, but the last few years just haven't been that successful in Indiana.
No, definitely hasn't. That's an interesting situation to follow. Would you expect Paul George to be moved now this offseason? Because you're not going to get equal value for him. It never happens.
I guess the main thing we'll see about him making an All-NBA team or whatever, because that would allow them to offer him that, the Supermax kind of deal. And in that case, I don't think he goes anywhere. But that's, the fact that it's hinging on that is a precarious situation. Let's say he doesn't make it, I think they kind of have to move him, right? And you're not going to get fair value. They're going to look for, obviously, youth and some pieces that can maybe get better and some draft picks, obviously. So, I mean, this actually might be the perfect situation for a team like Boston, right? This is where they can swoop in and get Paul George even cheaper than they could have gotten before. So it definitely is going to be one of the main storylines this summer.
No, I think the two logical teams would be Boston and L.A., right? I mean, those are the two teams. Paul George, I think Paul George wants to play in L.A. I think Boston has the assets to get Paul George and make a sweetheart of a deal for Indiana. Outside of those two squads, I don't see any other place that this guy could go.
Yeah, there's places he'd fit, but like you said, the assets just really aren't there a lot of places. I mean, you can think of a team like, what about Phoenix? Phoenix has a lot of young
sure.
players and
yep.
Picks, and, you know, it can make things happen. That'd be fun, but it's probably an outside shot. There's been so much smoke about the L.A. thing. I guess there's got to be some fire there. I thought it was no way in heck, but I also talked to Eric Pincus, and he posits that they're going to try to sign Blake Griffin in Los Angeles also, and that way they can look at Paul George and say, hey, come on over, and now we got two stars to build around, which would be pretty awesome.
Interesting. Before I let you go, I want to talk about the three closeout games tonight. First off, we'll go back to the Jazz and Clippers. Again, 8:30 tonight right here on KOAL. David Locker on Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. James, who wins this game tonight?
Jazz. Jazz got all the momentum. They're healthy. They've rested now. That's one thing about the playoffs, right? You're not playing back-to-back games. Gordon Hayward should be confident. His confidence should be brimming. Right now, Rudy Gobert knows that he can dominate. He can at least, you know, go toe-to-toe, if not win his matchup. There's just not enough options with Blake out in the Clipperland, and it'll be, you know, I think it'll be a close first quarter and a half, and I think the Jazz depth will wear him down, and ISO Joe's going to work his magic. So it's Jazz all the way tonight.
We have a couple of road teams that could close out series tonight. I know you're a Celtics guy tonight at Chicago. I don't see any way this series goes seven games. I would expect Boston to end this one tonight, and I expect them to end it fairly easy, too.
I'm the same. I think the Bulls kind of gave it their all in that adrenaline rush the first couple games, and we're seeing it's a war of attrition. Jimmy Butler looks like he's dealing with some kind of some kind of hindrance right now. His fourth quarter was really puzzlingly, I guess, meek. Last game is a good word to say. So yeah, I think Boston has all the momentum again. They're too deep. They have too many weapons. Avery Bradley now has woken up, so it's pretty easy. I think it might be a blowout for Boston tonight.
Washington, Atlanta. Who wins this game?
This is the one toss-up. I know that the Wizards are at home. Am I right? Are they home?
No, they're on the road. They're on the road.
Oh, see, and there you go. This is a toss-up for me because I thought the series would be over in like four or five after the first two games. Atlanta's really surprised me. Schroeder's been I knew he was a decent young player. The fact he's going toe-to-toe with John Wall right now has been a revelation to me. And I think Atlanta has a lot more guts than I thought they had coming into this series. I think Atlanta wins tonight.
So we get Game 7. As amazing as it sounds, we have no NBA basketball scheduled for tomorrow.
That's BS. I demand a recount. I don't believe it.
I know. Insane. There's no game scheduled tomorrow. James, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, check us out at bballbreakdown.com. We're covering the playoffs, too. And you can find me on social media. You can find me as an homage to my favorite player of all time, Scottie Pippen. You can find me at Snotty Drippin'. And, you can find me also on the Press Basketball Away Team Podcast.
Fantastic stuff as always, James. I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
You the man. Thanks for having me on.
Again, that's James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com joining us here on Drive Time Sports. We have to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to stick with the national sports scene. Rounds 2 and 3 of the NFL Draft coming up tonight. We'll go over some key storylines there when we return here on Drive Time Sports.